Welcome to the Commodity Trading Summit. This event is brought to you by Timing Research and Trade Out Loud. The event is being recorded and all the recordings will be available as soon as they're processed in the Timing Research website and also on the Timing Research YouTube channel. More details will be provided to you along this webinar in regards to the recordings. David Kostmeter and I, Anka Metcalf, will be your host today. So don't forget that we're going to remind you of a little disclaimer. All information provided today is for educational purpose only and should not be construed as investment advice regarding the purchase or sale of securities, options, futures, forex, or any other instrument of any kind. Trading involves a high level of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. You could lose money. So before deciding to trade, you should carefully consider your objectives, your level of experience, and risk appetite. Individual performance depends upon each person's skills, time commitment, and effort. Results may not be typical and individual results will vary. You must do your own research and make your own trading decisions. So with us today, we have a fantastic lineup of pro commodity traders that are happy to share their strategy, tips, tricks, and more with you. So with us today, we have Rich, and we're very happy to have you here. You have the mic.
Wonderful. Thank you, Anka. Thank you, David. And welcome to everyone who's joining us live here today. Hopefully, I can get through what I want to impart to you and offer some time for questions. So I hopefully answer what's on your mind as opposed to what I think might be on your mind. My name is Rich Chechen. I'm the president and COO of Asset Strategies International. And today I'm going to present on the topic near and dear to my heart, how to capture the next gold peak. So share the screen here. And I want to start off and just touch on why I chose this topic. I've been doing this a long time. I've been in the industry about a quarter century now working for Asset Strategies, and gold is near and dear to my heart. And here at Asset Strategies, we mainly focus on holding a small amount of gold or other precious metals in your portfolio as wealth insurance, and I'll get to that in a second. But I had a kind of a disturbing conversation with one of our clients after the last bull market, the one that ended in 2011. I met up with him at the New Orleans Investment Conference, Ryan London show there, and we met every year for years and years, and I walked up to him to have our standard lunch and get caught up, and he greeted me with, "Rich, you let me down." Now, those are words you never want to hear from a client if you're in a service-oriented business. So I dug in a little deeper and I said, "David, what's going on? What's the issue?" He said, "Well, you never told me when to get out of the last bull market." And I said, "Well, did you have a financial crisis? Did you have some sort of financial emergency that would have caused you to get out?" And his answer was no, but I was looking to make profit. Now, that's something he never communicated to me. And it kind of rang a bell that no matter what anybody says, you know, every time somebody calls us up to buy gold, silver, platinum, palladium, rare coins, they always say, "I want this." And our first question is, "What are you buying it for?" And usually they say wealth insurance, or they'll come out and they'll say profit. But my experience tells me that no matter which one you say you want, you really want both. You want wealth insurance in your portfolio, but you never want to buy an asset that goes down in value, right? So even if it's preserving purchasing power, that's a nebulous concept, you want it to perform as well, even though it's really your backstop. So based on that, I dug into one of my favorite quotes of famed investor Bernard Baruch, where he said, "I don't care about the first 20% profit on any investment, and I don't care about the last 20%. All I care about and all I want is my 60% in the middle," right? And those are some sage words, because basically what he's saying is he doesn't jump in on a flyer into an investment. He does his research, he looks at the fundamentals, but he also waits for the trend to develop. It's about 20%. Once it does, then he gets invested and he doesn't stick around to the bitter end hoping to catch a top. What he does is he gets out when he starts to see the warning signs and he banks his 60% profit in the middle. So that's kind of the basis of this presentation. But let me start off by telling you who I am and who I work for and give you a little background about who we are. So again, again. My name is Rich Chekin. I'm a 87 graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. Shout out to the Army football team. Two consecutive weeks, they beat Navy and then Air Force and won their third Commander-in-Chief's trophy in 4 years. So congratulations to them. But I served in the Army for about 6.5 years in Georgia, on the DMZ in Korea during Gulf Guam, in Hawaii with the 25th Infantry Division. I left the service in 93 as a captain and started my private career. Worked for multinational communications and direct sales companies. And in February of 96, I joined Asset Strategies. It's a firm that was started by my uncle, Michael Chekin, and his partner, the dearly departed Glenn O'Kirsch, back in 1982. And I joined them in 96, and I've been with them ever since. We're a precious metals, rare coin dealer. So we deal with gold, silver, platinum, and palladium bullion coins and bars. We also deal with rare U.S. gold and silver coins and world and ancient precious metal coins. We're known over the years for our innovation. Some things like precious metals IRAs, whether they be direct ownership domestically, held offshore, certificate programs. We designed the Perth Mint certificate program for the government of the West of Western Australia 25 years ago, shortly after I joined the firm. We were early on, Glenn actually was early on, instrumental in making platinum and palladium available to investors in 1 ounce, 5 ounce, 10 ounce bars and coins, something that didn't exist. It was really an industrial metal. He lobbied to get that done because he knew there was a market for it. We also innovated in terms of pre-1965 U.S. Silver coinage in the U.S., which is 90% silver, offering that in $100 face value bags. So we've been around a while. We're fairly influential. We know everybody in this market. But the one thing that sets us apart is customer service. And the one point I want to highlight is when you call us up and you say, I want to buy gold, we don't say how many. We ask, why are you buying it in the first place? Because that's important to get it in the right form, held the right way, in the right place, so you can accomplish the goals you set for yourself. The other thing that's really neat about Asset Strategies is our sales reps do not get paid commission. To me, that's important for the culture and the ethics of the company. We want them to be focused solely on your goals and objectives, not ours, right? So if I hang carrots in front of their faces, they're going to put you into something with a high premium, whether or not you want it, because they want to make more money. So I don't pay them a commission. If they do their job and take care of you, then I take care of them. Want to roll back to shortly after the last financial crisis. At that time, I think we called it the Great Financial Crisis. Ben Bernanke got up after one of the FOMC meetings, and he made this quote, which I don't think you can read all of it because of the positioning of the screens, but basically he said, if people feel that their financial situation is better because their 401k looks better, or for whatever reason, their house is worth more, they're more willing to go out and spend. That's going to provide the demand that firms need in order to be willing to hire and invest. And this is an important quote because this is the game plan. Make no mistake. It is not about a strong economy. It's about a strong consumer economy, which is based on feelings of stability, certainty, etc. So their goal all along was not necessarily to have your home be worth more or your stock portfolio to be worth more, but to be worth more in dollars. So when you look at it, you say, huh, I'm doing pretty well. I'm confident and I can go out and spend. Then companies with that consumer demand can go out and hire and invest. This was the game plan to get out of the crisis. And I think it's been working to perfection. If we look back at the last monetary expansion, so that's from the response to 2008-2009, the one thing I hear oftentimes from investors is, where's the inflation? They expanded the money supply, right? And if they do so, then the dollar should be worth less, and therefore consumer prices should rise. The problem is, last time around, 2008-2009, they didn't put money in the hands of consumers, the people who spent. They put it in the hands of the banks and brokerage firms. So although people will say they don't see consumer price inflation, I will tell you, based on that last quote I just read comment to you from Ben Bernanke, that they accomplished their mission. The inflation is in home prices. The inflation is in the stock market with their inflated share values. That's where we're seeing the inflation from the last time around, because that's where the money went to, okay? This time around, they did things a little bit differently. So we have this COVID-19 pandemic we're struggling through for the full year. And more importantly, as an investor, the impact of the government shutdowns worldwide and what they did to economies. So in order to, basically what they did, they shut everything down and everybody was in a bad position. So they decided to print money and put it in the hands of the consumers in the form of stimulus checks. They put it in the hands of small businesses through the payroll protection program. So they got the money down to the consumers, and yet still we're not seeing price inflation. It's because they shut down the economies. Where is a consumer to spend their money? They're not flying, they're not traveling, they're not going out to eat as often or at all. There's a lot of changes in society basis the pandemic and the government's response to it. I do think we will see that inflation, and that kind of gets to my next slide. I think, first off, we started out in a deflationary period, right? All the prices are going down because nobody's buying anything. There's nobody going out and doing anything. That's turning into it, if it hasn't already, into a recession. And that recession will eventually, once the economy starts to open back up again, we'll see the impact of consumer price inflation. And I think we're going to have to revisit of what we saw in the 70s, where we had a recession with inflation, what we call stagflation. I think that's where we're going. The impact of all of that on the precious metals market, sorry about my slides here, impact of on the investors is they're flocking to gold and silver because they see that potential of inflation. It's not there yet. It's latent or nascent inflation, but it's ready to pounce. They see these artificially low interest rates. The government's keeping the interest rates down and are expected to do so for a long period of time. It's already been a long period of time. That is conducive to gold and silver because there's no cost or opportunity cost to owning precious metals when your term deposits are paying virtually nothing or yielding negative real returns. We've got a U.S. dollar decline that is going leaps and bounds, basically. Last year, 2019, the dollar index, the USD, fell 7%. It did it again in 2020. We're down about 14% from the peaks, up around 103, 104 on the index. And I believe as of this morning, we're just over 90. But we were below 90 last week. Anything below 95 is bear territory for the dollar. And for metals people, that is positive because when folks lose faith in the dollar, they look to safe havens like gold and silver to protect their portfolios. And that's all happening because of the uncertainty and the market volatility that comes with uncertainty. Investors like to know, if I do this, then this is most likely going to happen. And that's a place that investors really haven't been in for a good period of time. We're seeing a lot of civil unrest as the gap between the haves and the have-nots widen. Remember, the price inflation we're seeing is in the stock market. I think only about 50% of the population is invested in the stock market, and you are seeing a chasm grow between those that have and those that have not, because those with stocks are benefiting from that price inflation. Those without it don't benefit. And again, as a result, we see the safe haven flows. You can see this play out on the chart. This is the gold 5-year chart. It's very basic. The couple things I want to point to are, one, a lot of people this past year said, well, COVID created this uptick in gold and silver and precious metals. I could tell you it did not. What created the uptick was it was time for a bull market. If you go back, I'll touch the gold-silver ratio chart here in a second, but if you go back to December of 2015, that's where we registered the lows for both gold and silver following the last bull market in precious metals that went from 2001 to 2011. At that point, silver was trading about $1,383 an ounce. Gold got down to its low of $1,050 per ounce. That was the bottom. That's probably legitimately the start of the bull market. That's when gold started creeping up. The next time I want you to pay attention is right about May of 2019, because gold was struggling, dealing with a strong resistance level at $1,300 an ounce that was created from the pullback from the last bull market. When gold came through 1,800 on the way down, it went like a hot knife through butter all the way down to 1,050. But it paused briefly at 1,300, okay? Tried to recoup itself and then went further down. So 1,800 to 1,300 was very quick. There was no resistance in between. So we spent about 2 years consolidating just under $1,300 from $1,200 to $1,300. It took a while. There were a few failed attempts to break out, and it didn't until May of 2019. And because there was virtually no resistance at that point, it shot up within about a month, month and a half to $1,550 an ounce once it finally broke through. That was confirmation that we were in the bull market. I don't believe it was the start of it. Silver follows gold, but lags, right? And then once it catches on and follows gold's lead, then it tends to outperform both to the upside and to the downside. So it went deeper, falling from its high near $50 an ounce in April 2011, it dropped way down, like I said, to about 1383. So the fall was deeper. It took a while to follow gold and eventually start moving up, and then it shot up. And on the next chart, you'll see this. So this is the gold-silver ratio. So it's a tracking of how many ounces of silver it takes to buy 1 ounce of gold. And folks like to look at this chart because typically, historically, forget about that part way to the right where it spiked. Typically, when you hit a reading of about 80, the trend reverses. When you go down to a level of 35 to 50, it reverses back up. But the gold-silver ratio at 80 tends to suggest historically that gold and silver have bottomed, and they both are going to start rising, but silver will follow and outpace gold, and that GSR number will come down. When it goes down to 35 to 50, it suggests we are at the peak of the bull market, and that will reverse, and both will fall, silver will fall faster, right? So that's kind of what this chart tells us. The neat thing is earlier this year, we saw that index at an unprecedented, the chart doesn't reflect it, 127. That was a screaming buy signal for silver. And it didn't take very long for it to correct back down to more reasonable levels. Today we sit at 72.46, still working our way back down to 35 to 50. Now, I started the show by saying our firm typically looks to gold as wealth insurance. And my definition of wealth insurance is it's the store of purchasing power with high liquidity for a potential financial crisis you hope to never have. And I look at this portion of your portfolio as very different from a for-profit purchase of gold or silver in your portfolio. So when you look at how to manage this and how to get in and out of the market so you don't get caught at the top like David did in my initial story, the one thing you have to understand is wealth insurance is different. This is not for-profit. This is buy and hold always. Now, personally, I believe in about a 10% allocation. Everybody's situation is different, but that number comes from studies that have been done by World Gold Council and others, where they looked at various portfolios with different stock bond mixes in different currencies. And what they found is having less than 8% gold in a portfolio, or having more than 8% gold in a portfolio at all times through all markets, doesn't really help your cause. It's an optimal point to have about 8%. Most people in our industry go with 10 just because the math is easier. Okay. But the real number from the studies is about 8%, and you buy it, you hold it, and you never ever sell it unless you have a financial crisis. So let's talk about this. You allocate whatever that number is. Again, for me, it's 10. If you have an emergency, you immediately sell that gold and you meet the financial crisis. And then as soon thereafter as you can, you replenish and build back up to the proper allocation for the next financial crisis you hope to never have. If you never have an emergency, wonderful for you. I suggest passing that wealth on to your heirs, giving them a start in life, teaching them the value of real money. If you do this, then you tend to have all sorts of protections that you wouldn't otherwise. And I'll give you two examples that basically prove when buying gold for the right reasons, there's no such thing as the wrong time or the wrong place. The first one is just an observation. I'm sure you all have watched the markets. You're all traders. You may have noticed that when news like Lehman Brothers or AIG back in the last financial crisis, when their meltdowns occurred, if you look at the markets that day, both stocks and gold fell. The difference is gold immediately recovered within a day or two. And the reason for this is, if you think back to that time frame, people were using their homes as piggy banks, right? They were taking equity out of their home. They were leveraging. So they were taking, say, 100K out, and they were leveraging two or three times and then making investments in the stock market. The problem was when the financial crises hit, stocks fell, right? Their leverage part of their portfolio basically fell below a level and they needed to make margin calls. Where do you go when you need money immediately? You go to that liquid store of purchasing power. So people sold off gold, silver, platinum, palladium, in order to meet that financial need, meet the margin call, and then right away, bargain hunters came in and started buying on the opportunity. That's why gold rose and recovered so quickly. And we saw this again this year when the news of the pandemic hit. The stock market plummeted, gold fell as well, and then immediately recovered as the bargain hunters dropped in. I'll give you one other example. This is not an investing application for financial crisis, but it's very real. And one client who had convinced his mother to go in with him and buy Perth Mint silver certificates way back when, 96, 97, when we started offering the program. Now, she was reluctant. She did not understand this. She did not believe in it, but she trusted in her son, and they both invested in silver early on, back in 2000, 2001, too. As the market started moving up, everything was wonderful. She was a believer. They never touched the metal because they never had a reason to. And then my client was involved in a serious car wreck, and he totaled $1 million or $2 million worth of medical expenses as a result of it, because he had some heart problems as a result. And the insurance company came in and said, I'm sorry, we're denying all claims because that was a pre-existing condition. Mom started selling off the silver to pay the medical bills. And I promise you, as we sit here today, she is a firm believer in wealth insurance and having that available in a portfolio for something that back then she just didn't envision. So that's the role of gold as wealth insurance. You sell it if you need to, but if you don't need to, maintain that allocation, never sell unless you have that need. So that's a little bit different than profit or for-profit purchases. And I tend to look in the metals conference or in the metals arena, I look for silver, for the profit motive, for what I mentioned earlier about the gold-silver ratio. So silver follows gold. Gold is your leader. When it establishes the trend down, silver starts to follow, okay? And then it outpaces to the downside. When silver turns or gold turns this corner, starts moving up, then silver will follow after lagging a bit, and then it tends to outpace to the upside, all right? So what you have is a much wider pendulum swing for silver than you would for gold. So a lot of folks look to silver for that profit potential, buying well low, and riding that pendulum swing all the way to the top in a bull market. And you kind of pay attention to the gold-silver ratio when you do that, and that's where you maximize your profits for silver. And I'll tell you how I manage that in a second. Just to give you an idea of the impact of how much metals can move in a market, I hear it all the time, well, gold, it's a barbarous relic. It doesn't generate any interest, any dividends. I actually was at an AAII conference, and a guy came up to me, he said, no, you're the gold guy. I'm not interested because I really love my dividends. I said, well, that's great. What sort of returns, what sort of dividends are you making? And he said, well, yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, gold can't keep up. I said, well, did you realize that from 1971 to 1980, roughly a 9-10 year period, gold went from $37.44 an ounce to $8.50, and it was up over 2,000%. The last bull market, 2011, gold went from about 250, 256 and a quarter to 1921 2017, a 650% gain. By the way, silver was up 1,000% in those 10 years. And then in today's bull market, so far, we're just getting going. Gold's up about 80%. But I asked him, I said, are you making roughly 65 to 100% profit per annum on your dividend stocks? And in some cases, you may be. In other cases, you may not. I think there's a reason to consider gold and silver for profit as well. And this is how I deal with that. First off, as you know, as seasoned investors, emotion has nothing to do with our decisions. It shouldn't anyway. If we lose money, I think the first thing you can point to typically is emotion. That's where more money probably is lost than anywhere else. You need to go ahead and, if you want to use silver and or gold for profit, you set your allocation. Now, I mentioned I like the wealth insurance at 8 or 10%, whatever suits you, but I look at a different pot of money. I look at investable assets. I like another 10 to 15% of investable assets in precious metals at the beginning of a bull market for profit as well. And this is where David needed to pay attention back then. So you allocate whatever that is for you. So even at my most bullish, I've got 25% in precious metals, no more. Okay. But let's say I put that other 10 to 15% in, I watch it and I allocate or I rebalance as necessary. So if I see a spike and now the gold that I had at 10% for profit is at 20% of my investable assets, I need to sell half without hesitation, without emotion. Okay. If it falls and I have a 10% allocation, and now all of a sudden I'm holding 5% investable in gold, I need to buy more. Because by doing so, I buy well, right? I take advantage of those dips in the marketplace, and I also sell at the peaks, the short-term peaks in the marketplace. So by putting those two together, rebalancing and making my purchases or sales, I'm banking profits all the time. I'm maximizing my exposure in the marketplace. And quite honestly, the top simply doesn't matter. Okay. If I've taken profit all along the way, who the heck cares where the top is? I don't have to catch it. I've already compensated myself. The only thing that's tricky about this scenario is, when is it a top and that's falling, or is it another bull market dip? And that's where you have to kind of pay attention to a bunch of different criteria. Any one of these things does not signify the end of the bull market, but you start putting 2, 3, 4 of them together and you have to think, okay, maybe it's time to start looking for the exits. This is not a dip anymore. This is a signal for the top. So the first thing is duration. If you remember from the chart or the slide a couple slides ago, most bull markets in precious metals tend to be about 10 years long. So depending on whether you call the start of the bull market December 2015, or if you think it's when the breakout occurred in 2019, we've got somewhere between 3 to 8 more years left in this bull market. So we have come nowhere near the end of the road in terms of duration. You want to look at the gold price. It's been a pretty good indicator. Now, we can't go too far back to look at this because prior to 71, gold had an official price and was convertible to dollars. And we really can't look until after Nixon closed the gold window for convertibility to see a free market, free floating gold price. But from then on, if you look at the previous bull market, the next bull market high is typically 2 to 3 times whatever the previous high was. So last time around, we were looking at 1921. So you want to start looking for the exits somewhere around $3,800, $3,000 to $4,000 an ounce. Okay. The gold silver ratio I mentioned earlier. So we signaled the bottom for both metals at 80 and above this time around. But what we're looking for now is somewhere between 35 and 50 to indicate that gold and silver are near their peaks. When that happens, start looking for the exits. Sentiment. We're not there yet, but everybody that's doing any bit of traveling right now, albeit masked up and socially distanced, if your Uber driver starts giving you tips on how much money they made in gold and silver, then you know that sentiment is turning and you might consider to look for the exits. Interest rates. I mentioned the cost trade-off with interest rates and precious metals returns, right? So if interest rates are down very low, single digits, and you're getting a zero or negative or low positive real return, that's really no competition for precious metals in your portfolio. When it starts rising and we get to high single digits, now all of a sudden you've got a trade-off that you've got to think, okay, am I better taking the safe route and going in term deposits, or am I better holding it in precious metals and looking for those returns? So as interest rates start climbing, higher single digits, you might start looking for the exits. US dollar, this is kind of like the counter to gold, right? So if we have confidence in the dollar, we don't think we need gold. If we have confidence in gold, we don't think we need dollars. Right now, we're in the latter where we have confidence in gold and we're losing confidence in the dollar. It's down below 90 or 95. When we see it get above 95 and climbing on the US dollar index, it is time to look for the exits. And then the last one I throw in is social and political stability. When we see that return to the conversation, and I dare say it is not there yet, when we see that return to the conversation, then again, start looking for the exits. Now, again, any one of these is not enough to say, I'm done. There's no more profit here. This is the top. You start putting three, four of them together, and again, time to look for the exits. So that being said, I have a few suggestions for you. Give us a call. Send us an email. The next slide is going to have our contact information and discuss your goals with us. Again, we're going to ask you, why are you buying this? And we'll put you in the best form of the metal to meet your needs. So we'll help you establish your plan so you can buy the dips. You can take profits all along the way. You can forget about the top, because it becomes irrelevant, okay? And we'll try to focus you on the warning signs to watch for, that this bull market may very well be coming to an end. In order to help you do that, we have a few tools and incentives. First off, we've published our newsletter, monthly information line, for 38 years of our existence. It's a free newsletter. Most people will tell you it is worth every penny. We touch on our world, commodities. We talk about macro issues, and we bring in some guests to talk about other areas like Bitcoin and things like this that might be coming into the conversation. We also have a twice weekly alert service, which comes now with a new video update once weekly on Wednesdays. Again, a free service. It's our way of letting you know what we see in the marketplace, and we also take your questions and comments, and we work them into that update weekly, so you're getting your questions answered. It's a two-way conversation. If you want a more direct two-way conversation, I am always available for a free consultation. Just need to give us a call. Say, I heard about Rich on Trader Synergy, and I want to go ahead and talk a little bit about my situation. I'm happy to do that. That's what we're here for, and hopefully we can come to some plan again that you can then act to take advantage of the market that we're in. And in order to incentivize you to do that, with every qualifying purchase, we're going to give away to Trader Synergy folks. You got to mention you came from Trader Synergy. We're going to give away a free Silver Eagle with every qualifying purchase. It's not a lot, but it helps you get started. Contact information, Michael Chekin, still very much involved in the company as the chairman and CEO. Myself, Brian Zweig is our preferred client relations manager, and he's got his team to help you as well. Just reach out to us again, toll free, 800-831-0007. That's 10 better than James Bond, by the way. You can call us direct at 301-881-8600, or send us an email at infoasi@assetstrategies.com. You can also visit our website and see all the different ways we have of owning precious metals that can help you suit your needs. And with that, I just kind of want to leave you with our mantra, and it comes from that wealth insurance. It's cut off on my screen, maybe not on yours with the speaker boxes, but our mantra is keep what's yours. And the way we do that, the best way we know to do that, is to have that proper wealth insurance allocation for that financial emergency you hope to never have. And by all means, go ahead and take advantage of what the market's giving you in terms of a bull market to go ahead and make some profits too, that I think would boggle the mind of many dividend investors. And with that, I hope I left enough time to open it up to questions, because I really love to hear what's on your mind and address that for you and the rest of the folks listening here today. Okay. So I do see one question here from Reg, And it says lots of good gains, but from 81 to 01, you have a very significant decline. Great if you can average, but if the insurance needs to happen during that time, bad timing for sure at the least. I want to say that's a misconception, Reg. And let me explain. The problem is we measure things in our society with dollars, okay? Now, this is going to get very basic, but I think it's an important point. Let's say I took a 12-inch ruler and I measured the length of my desk, okay? I would come up with a certain number, 4 feet, 5 feet long, whatever the case might be. If the next day I went back, I chopped an inch off my ruler, now it's an 11-inch ruler, and I measured my desk again, my desk is going to look like it grew, but it didn't. My measuring device, my standard of length decreased, okay? When you look at measuring things in dollars, right, it'd be great if the dollar preserved purchasing power. It does not, all right? Since we came off the gold standard, the dollar's fallen 96% in purchasing power, okay? So our ruler for measuring value or worth is getting shorter all the time, all right? And then we're measuring those same products with it, and they look bigger. They look like they're worth more. Everything, in my opinion, should be measured in gold. Gold is a standard measure of worth. Now, you all have heard this scenario, I'm sure, where back in Roman times, an ounce of gold bought you a brand new toga, the business suit of the day. In 1918, shortly after the Fed was created, an ounce of gold was about $18 an ounce. And back then, it bought a nice new business suit, right? So you talk about that period of 1981 to 2001, and you look also at today. So when I started in this business in 96 to 2001, right, gold was down around 256 an ounce, 253 an ounce. I will tell you, because I bought suits when I first came to work for Asset Strategies, that I could buy a nice new business suit at 256. Today, I cannot. Today, I cannot buy a nice new business suit for $18. But I can buy it for an ounce of gold at $1,800, $1,900. Gold is preserving purchasing power, okay? Don't ever lose sight of that. It is a true measure of value and worth. So holding that block for wealth insurance is critical, because no matter what the dollar may be doing in the meantime, gold is doing its job. Don't lose sight of it, okay? And if you have an emergency, it will help you meet those needs. Next question I see up here comes from George, and I hope I answered your question, Reg. Next question comes from George. It says, what is your view on platinum over the coming few years? And, you know, platinum is starting to turn around. It had a brief moment a week or so ago where it was up over $1,000 an ounce. Hasn't been in that place for a while. You know, I remember back when, you know, platinum and palladium's roles were reversed here. The problem is we've seen the drop-off in diesel engine production, and, you know, palladium in diesel engines at those very high temperatures tends to oxidize and it doesn't do its job as well in terms of emissions control. So platinum is the choice, but with diesel demand going way down, palladium has kind of emerged as the sister metal in the platinum group of choice, and it's been the best performer in the metal sector for about 6-7 years at this point, maybe 5 years, maybe 6-7 too much. So palladium is in the forefront. I expect both metals, right, to go ahead and follow gold and silver up on their coattails in the near term. However, I really do not see any sort of significant gains in either from here until economies start to open up. Gold and silver have the benefit of being either primarily or at least partially monetary metals in the case of silver. Platinum and palladium are very much industrial metals. Okay, so they're going to get a little bit of a benefit from gold here and silver moving up. But the industry is not there to support that demand. So I think it's going to be a slower road to hoe than with gold or with silver. I see a question here from DW. He said, would there ever be an advantage to buying a gold or silver futures contract and taking delivery? I'm not a futures and options guy. I will tell you that if you know how to do it, one of the best ways, most cost-effective ways to own gold and silver is actually to buy a futures contract and stand for delivery. It's a fairly complicated process. Most people don't do it. I think the statistics are less than 2 or even 1% of those who hold contracts ever take delivery, okay? And that's that paper market in precious metals that you hear all about. But a lot of folks feel there's a lot more contracts out than there is metal to back it up. And it's because so few actually take delivery. But if you do stand for delivery, it's a very cost-effective way of owning precious metals, but you also have to deal in exchange sized bars. So I'm pretty sure the minimum there for silver is 1,000-ounce bars, about 75 pounds. Great traction in the snow in your trunk, but hard to move around otherwise. So yes, there is a reason to do that. There's another reason too, and it's not for me, it's not for my world, but there are some very good futures and options people that will try to multiply the effects of a rise or a fall in the precious metals by owning futures and options. That's, again, not my world. I deal in physical stuff. We're going to send it to your doorstop or to a depository on your behalf. I see Red just back in, says, I sure don't want to get bogged down in this. It's a big conversation. During that time, gold declined. That suit went up in price. Pretty much answered. I thought there was a trading strategy that you could employ during that time. The only trading strategy that I might suggest you look at, Reg, in terms of gold and silver, is to work that gold-silver ratio, right? So when I look at that peak of 80 or higher, where gold and silver are at their bottom in terms of price, I can do one of three things depending on what my goals and objectives are. If I'm buying for wealth insurance, I think gold, right? And at that point in time, my premium for my insurance policy, for my wealth insurance, is dirt cheap. Great time to be buying gold for wealth insurance. If I'm focused on profit, I already mentioned earlier, I tend to look more at silver than gold. And that's a great time to be getting into silver at the bottom of that deep pendulum swing to ride it all the way up to the top. If you're a trader, what you typically want to do here, playing the gold-silver ratio, is when it hits that bottom, where let's say it's 80, or in this case, it got to 127 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold, what you want to do at that point in time is you want to sell your gold and you want to buy silver with the proceeds. And then when the gold-silver ratio works its way back down to 35 to 50, you then in turn want to sell your silver and purchase gold with proceeds. That's a common trading strategy with the GSR. Let me see. Michael Harris, good presentation. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. In your opinion, what is the best way to keep gold in the highly unlikely case governments will try to confiscate in the future? Well, got a couple thoughts here, and I'm glad that question came up. I think, now I'm a metals dealer, but I don't buy into the hype and the fear of confiscation, and I'll tell you why. I think that tactic has been used over the years to the advantage of rare coin dealers who sell coins at much higher premiums than bullion coins and bars. And their goal is, if you're coming to buy gold, they say, ooh, back in 1933, the government confiscated gold. You don't want to own bullion. What you want to do is you want to own illegal tender coins that were not confiscated back then. Well, I have a couple problems with that because I think really what they're trying to do is to get you not to pay a very low premium and have a low entry price on gold. They're trying to seed their pockets with your capital by selling you high premium rare coins. And they're the ones that are most likely to make this argument to you. The reason I don't buy into it is because, well, first off, last time around when they confiscated gold, they did not collect those legal tender coins. However, who's to say they don't do it this time, right? The second point, and I think this is even more important, is back in 1933, if you'll recall, gold was convertible to dollars, right? All the way up until 1971 when we closed the gold window, all right? So it was convertible. And the goal here, I am absolutely convinced, was not to own your gold. The goal was to devalue the US dollar in a form that the public would swallow, right? So they collected all the gold that was held at an official price. They revalued the gold higher, and in effect, they devalued the US dollar with which it was tied. So this was all about devaluing the dollar. It had nothing to do with gold. It's not about confidence. The market in gold comparatively is so tiny, it doesn't make a bit of a difference. It was because it was an official price. They wanted to change that price higher to therefore devalue the dollar in a way that we would not care, not miss it, not notice it. Okay. Since 1971, gold is not convertible to the dollar. I do not see that threat happening again. The only only reason I can think that the government might confiscate gold now is if they really wanted to piss off the entire population. I don't see it happening. Okay. So if you're buying for wealth insurance, stick with bullion. If you're buying a small percentage of your investable assets in rare coins for the potential of appreciation in the collector's market, that's the reason to own rare coins. We sell plenty of them for that reason, but you need to buy it for the right ones. Okay. George came in, says, I'm concerned and displeased about Bitcoin hurting gold. Any comments? Will digital currencies potentially be adopted by central banks hurt or help gold? Okay. So I hear this all the time. It's a big argument. I was in two gold versus Bitcoin debates this past year. Although on the second one, I don't know how I lost in terms of legacy, but in both cases, gold won. And here are my thoughts on Bitcoin. I think that no matter what the Bitcoiners, the purists believe, anything can be assailed, okay? So they say that it's pseudonymous, or if I said that proper, and you can't find out the true owners, but they can, because the blockchain is a store of all the information of everywhere that's been, okay? So what they need is they need somebody to cave and say, okay, here's who bought what and did what at what time. And that is possible because it's already happened, whether it be on the exchanges. I think BitMEX was just recently assailed for not having anti-money laundering policies in place. So, you know, the bottom line is it is assailable. I think the only reason the governments haven't assailed Bitcoin yet is because it's like a gnat on their windshield, right? It's just not that much to be concerned about. So they're not concerned about it. I do think that the power the government has is over the money and therefore over the people. And they're not going to give up that power to a free market option to fiat currencies. I kind of wish they would, because I think the free market and the private industry would do a better job of finding the true value of a fiat currency, but I don't think they're going to let that happen. I do expect the government to take on crypto-based digital currencies. I think eventually, and they're all working on this technology now, that is what the dollar or the euro or what have you goes to, a central bank-issued cryptocurrency. Now, all that being said, my only real problem with Bitcoin is this idea that it's gold. There's a commercial out from Grayscale ETFs right now saying, oh, get your gold, buy Bitcoin. It's so much better for all these reasons. I do think Bitcoin is for real. But let's face it, on January 3rd, it's going to be 12 years old. Okay. I've been selling gold for 25 years, and that's 1/200th of its lifetime. Gold is gold. There is no substitute. Bitcoin wants you to think it's like gold because they're searching for credibility of an infant asset class. Doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's an infant, immature asset class. To me, that screams of speculation. 1-2% tops. Go ahead. Make those wild profits. Hopefully you get out before it drops from 20,000 down to 3,500 and then starts working back up again. But that is very much a speculative market. You want to put money in there. I believe that you don't mind losing. And the only thing I would suggest is if you make those crazy profits, rebalance. Take some of that off the table at the peak and bank it into something real, gold. Okay. I hope that answered your question. Let me see. Thank you for your time. Have a safe and Merry Christmas. Same to you, Reg. Thank you so much. From Michael, if WWW goes down for some reason for extended period, gold may skyrocket. Yeah, I tend to agree with you. That's another one of the Achilles heels of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies in general. And you know, I'm not a Bitcoin expert. I think there's really two, maybe a few more that matter out of the 9,000 cryptos that are out there, but it's probably Bitcoin, Ethereum, and maybe one or two others. Again, I look at that strictly as a speculation at this point. I hope it works out. I would love it if that would replace the dollar and the euro and everything else, and there'd be accountability. Once again, a reason to balance a checkbook at the government level, because we sorely, sorely need it. But yes, if there's an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, if computers are down, your Bitcoin may not be gone, but if you can't access it, what's it worth at that moment when you need it? Gold is real. You can hold it in your hand and nobody manages it. Nobody mismanages it. Okay? I don't know if there's any other questions at this point, but I think I went through the whole list and we've got about 5 minutes left. I'm here and I'm all yours if you have something else for me. If not, I'll leave you with this point. Make no mistake, we are in a bull market in precious metals. goals. I believe it started in 2015. I think we have at least another 5 years left in this thing. We have only scratched the surface of the potential of gold and silver's appreciation in a bull market. So over the next 5 years, I expect it to come along pretty darn well. I was actually surprised that gold took out the previous all-time high already this year. And if the pandemic and the government shutdown had anything to do with the gold market and the silver market, it was that it threw kerosene on a fire that was already burning. And that's why we hit 2075 so quickly, okay? And then pulled back on some profit taking and consolidation. But I fully expect the next move will be higher from here. So we're in the midst of a bull market. I really think the first thing you do is you own precious metals for wealth insurance and protect that purchasing power going forward for that emergency you'd hope you never have. But by all means, you can buy well and sell where here all along the way to where you don't care about where the profit is. One more question came up. What do you think about 3.9's fine 10 gram bars? You know, there are a lot of people have preferences, and it really comes down to that, about what form of the metal you own it in. I've heard a lot of people say buy government minted coins, you know, the eagle, the buffalo, the maple leaf, the Philharmonic, the kangaroo, the Krugerrand, over a bar because they're more liquid. I've been selling precious metals for 25 years now. I have yet to find someone who would not buy a bar or a coin, okay? So for me, it comes down to preference, and at the time of purchase, I try to manage spreads, right? So I look at that time at if I bought right now and I sold right now, how much am I paying? How much am I getting paid? And I look at that difference for a bar, for a coin, etc. And if I don't have any other particular preference or reason to buy a specific form of the metal, I go wherever the premium is the lowest, okay? Just trying to set myself for success up in the future. The only other thing I would say is, and this is just a word of advice for anybody that wants it, reach out to me via email. We'll go ahead and send you a digital copy of our 10 biggest mistakes that investors make. And we talk in there about ETFs, a conversation that didn't come up, and I don't think we'll have time today. We talk about mining stocks, the differences between that and owning precious metals. But one of the biggest points there is this. If you are looking to buy gold, silver, platinum, palladium, rare coins, I would strongly suggest that before you buy, you ask the dealer this question. When I'm ready, will you buy back? And if the answer is no, whatever the cockamamie reason they give you, like you could do better at auction or this, that, the other, understand that either one of two things exist. Either they don't value it, which is why they won't buy it back. And if that's the case, they should just give it to you, not sell it to you. Or what they're really concerned about, and I believe this is the answer, is if they bought it back, they would expose their exceedingly large spreads transparently to you, and you're not going to like them very much, okay? So the bottom line is, you know, if they say they don't buy back, do not buy from them. Thank you, Michael. Happy holidays to you as well. And if I have time, I have one last question I wanted to cover. You cannot go to the grocery store, buy food with ETF in case of emergency. That's a great point. You can go to a grocery store if the situation develops and buy it with junk silver or an ounce of gold. I've seen back in the 70s, remember when we were having trouble with the inflation and the metals prices rising, I saw grocery store gas stations with signs out front saying you can pay in junk silver. They would weigh it or count it right there in the parking lot, basis the current silver of or the current value of silver, and they would give you a store credit to buy gas and groceries at their store. You can use precious metals. And today, you can still buy a gallon of gas here in Maryland for 25 cents, as long as it's a pre-1965 90% U.S. order. And thank you all. Appreciate it, Danny. I enjoyed spending the time with you. I hope to talk with you again in the future, but I think our time is up.